I'm Rita Devereaux. Welcome to a special edition of Meteor File on Vision TV Insight. We're continuing our coverage, what really happened September 11th, how do those events affect us now? And we have four distinguished panelists to help us with this topic. First, Michael Rupert, a former Los Angeles City narcotics detective, and presently the editor of From the Wilderness, a newsletter about politics, economics, and intelligence. Ron Atke, lawyer, former member of parliament, and maybe very important for this discussion, the head of the Security Intelligence Review Committee, or the watchdog that looked after CSIS in 1984. Phyllis Creighton, a peace activist, particularly for the Anglican Synod of Canada, but in real life, an ethicist dealing with reproductive technologies. And Peter Debra, former dean of the Journalism School at the University of Western Ontario, and one of the commissioners of the Somalia inquiry into possible wrongdoing of the Canadian military in Somalia. Now, our topic is what really happened September 11th. Michael Rupert, you are spending most of your time now speaking to groups, especially in the United States, about the events of September 11th. And I think it would be fair to say that your opinions are somewhat controversial. Why are you doing this? Why are you talking to so many groups about September 11th?
Well, first of all, we have had overwhelming demand to discuss the subject of September the 11th. I'm not the only person with a great many questions about the official story emanating from the United States government about what happened before, during, and has happened after the attacks on the World Trade Center. There are a great deal of anomalies, for lack of a better word, monstrous inconsistencies, and using government documents, using...
What do you want the audiences, though, to get from your presentation?
That they should be asking a lot of questions, that there are a great many lies that have been told about September the 11th. That the war is really about oil, it's about control of the drug money, it's about construction of pipelines.
Let me stop you there. Let's examine what happened the day of September 11th. Mike Rupert.
Well, the most telling fact in all the research that I have done, as a researcher named Jared Israel, has a website, The Emperor's New Clothes, TENC.net. He pulled out FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, and U.S. Air Force policy procedure manuals going back 25 years. For 25 years, it has been standard operating procedure in the United States that the instant any aircraft under FAA control, passenger aircraft, loses transponder contact, loses radio contact, or deviates from course, fighter jets are responsive. Remember the case of Payne Stewart, the famous golfer? He got in a plane in Texas, a Learjet went up, they lost pressure, everybody died. F-16 fighters were scrambled and beside it in a very short period of time without presidential authorization. Yet, on the day of September the 11th, after the first plane had crashed into the World Trade Center, after it was known that four simultaneous hijackings had occurred, an event which has never before occurred in human history, no U.S. Air Force fighters are scrambled. Period. That defies imagination. The only way that standard procedures could not... The only way that fighters could not have been scrambled would have been if the National Command Authority issued orders for them not to be scrambled, period. We have also seen concrete evidence of the fact that Andrews Air Force Base did maintain, contrary to what Vice President Cheney said, ready response fighters at the highest state of alerts. How do we know this? Because Jared Israel archived the Andrews Air Force Base website, which was altered 2 days after September the 11th to indicate that it didn't have scramble-ready fighters at the base. These facts alone demand not only outrage, but severe questioning.
How do you respond to what Mike Rupert just said?
Well, how many instances have we seen in maybe the nuclear industry or other industries where human systems absolutely do not function the way they're supposed to function?
But this
it happens all the time.
Four at once is that defies logic to believe that the whole system could fail after the World Trade Center had been attacked and it was standard operating.
I'm not sure. I'd have to know the chain of information. I'd have to know where the flow of information
that's
was.
That's well documented.
And if there was a deliberate blockage of information at some point, that would become identified. I'd have to know the whole history.
Right. Peter, with the lights traveling along the routes and you see where they deviated. I've seen it, the chart where you press and you see the different routes. And you think, how in the world? Aha. That's an aha moment. You've unmasked.
Oh, my God.
You've unmasked a gap for which there's only one explanation. It was deliberate.
These questions are going to have to be answered. I can't draw the conclusion you've drawn. I think the questions have to be answered. They have to be raised. I think also, though, dealing with security intelligence, the Al-Qaeda network just didn't spring into existence on September 11th.
It's true.
It was well known. The CIA, the FBI, our own CSIS had filed reports, extensive reports on they may have missed, I'm only speculating, don't know for sure, the focus was on Europe and the Middle East, and the domestic systems, which feeds into Peter's point, domestic security in Canada and the U.S., particularly related to airline travel, was pretty lax. Pretty lax. There were human errors, the baggage handling, the air traffic controllers, the screening of employees. It was a pretty lax domestic system compared to what was going on in other parts of the world. That may have been a security failure.
As a young political journalist, one of the first things I learned was that the illusion that somebody up there knows what's happening all the time and knows how to deal with it is an illusion, in fact. And that at the very top, and you'd know this more than I do, things can be incredibly disorganized and chaotic sometimes.
This would be a small point in a courtroom battle, but I think it would be a valid legal point. But you look for indications of guilty knowledge. And the tampering of the Andrews Air Force Base website 2 days after the attack to remove the references so that Vice President Cheney's statement, we didn't have any fighters at Andrews, that raises monstrous questions that cannot be explained by simple human malfeasance.
But suppose there was somebody at that, just supposing that that Air Force base, in fact, that had made a mistake and should have transmitted information and didn't transmit information, and one way of covering that up was to change the database.
Are you satisfied with that?
I don't know. It's possible.
But I mean,
what about the airplane that was scrambled?
Well, there were actually two fighters scrambled from Otis Air Force Base in Massachusetts that arrived at the World Trade Center moments too late for the second attack. Now, here's the problem. Scrambled fighters, and I'm an Air Force brat, scrambled fighters do not leave with half-full tanks of gasoline. They leave with full tanks of gasoline. An F-16 has a combat radius of more than 1,500 miles. On afterburner, it could have been on any of the other two remaining aircraft within moments, and yet they were called away.
But for those of us who get lost in the aviation, Ron Atkin, your statement that, in fact, there was a lot of information known about these networks. How do you tally there was a lot of information known, but suddenly no one knows anything on the day
that
happened?
Well, I think they know. I think there's an awful lot that's known that's not yet public, and by its very nature, it can't be made public. But I think, for example, how did the pilots of these aircraft that were hijacked, where did they get their training? How did they get entry into Canada or the United States, as the case may be? I think there was a trail there. It may have been incompetence. It may have been insufficient resources, which I think was the case in Canadian terms, to properly provide the kind of intelligence that governments need to prevent terrorists operating within their midst. And I think, therefore, governments have been attempting, too late perhaps, to shore up on that side. By that token alone, maybe an admission of security intelligence failure.
We know, by the way, just very briefly, that Muhammad Atta received training at Maxwell Air Force Base, and that was reported in two American papers. These are other questions. How did a known terrorist member of Al-Qaeda get to train at Maxwell Air Force Base? There was one tenant of the World Trade Center, the Zim Israeli-American Shipping Company, and I started, right after the attacks, researching the list of tenants, and I found out that the Zim Israeli American Shipping Company moved out, I believe it was the 9th of September, to Norfolk, Virginia, and it broke its lease to move out of the World Trade Center and got its people out. My point is, there is some right-wing speculation that Israel had something to do with the attack. I don't believe that for a moment. I believe that the Mossad was doing everything it could to warn the U.S.
So the Israeli intelligence agency warned the U.S. of the attack.
And they were smart enough to get their people out of Dodge before the first plane hit.
The U.S. economy and September 11th and the drug trade. What's the economy got to do with anything?
Well, actually, a great deal. We know from very well-respected sources, Le Monde Diplomatique has indicated that there is $1 trillion a year in criminal money. The IMF last year said at $1.5 trillion. We know, thanks to Senator Carl Levin in the U.S. through his report on correspondent banking, that at least $500 billion a year is laundered through the American banking system. The world drug trade accounts for some $600 billion a year in liquid cash, which is a financial asset in the world banking market. And when drug dollars find their way into net profits, they boost stock values upwards of $30, $60, depending upon price-to-earnings ratio. It is a part and parcel of the American economic system. The drug cash flow is important because liquid cash, as opposed to other measures of GDP, is very powerful. You can't put gas in your car with a bushel of wheat. The cash, especially on cash flow, it worms its way into leverage buyouts. It's extremely powerful. We know that the CIA historically has had a tremendously deep relationship with Wall Street. The current executive vice president of the New York Stock Exchange, David Daugherty, is a former CIA general counsel. Bill Casey, Ronald Reagan's infamous CIA director, was chairman of the SEC. The CIA, we know, has dealt drugs. We have Inspector General's reports from the U.S. in 1998 by Fred Hitz, where there's page after page and document after document saying that the CIA was directly involved in the drug trade, keeping drug traffickers out of jail, and in effect controlling the flow of the cash into the U.S. economy. The run-up to September 11th is that Afghanistan had been the single largest producer of heroin, opium, in the world, supplying some 70% of the world's opium trade. The largest crop in history prior to September 11th had been the 2000 crop at some 3,800 to 4,000 metric tons in the year 2000. In 2001, the Taliban destroyed their entire opium crop. They took some $200 billion in cash out of the world banking system. There were no opium crops. Tony Blair was saying, we shall bomb the poppy fields. Well, there were no poppy fields. Okay. On the other hand, we occupied Afghanistan in late October, early November, and the planting season for the opium poppy begins in November, and the harvest is in June. The Times of London last week reported that there will be a world record harvest in Afghanistan this year of 4,500 metric tons of opium, which will equate to 450 tons of heroin, where there's going to be a monstrous heroin plague. But that cash flow, thanks to U.S. military occupation, exactly though it was in Vietnam, will result in a monstrous heroin epidemic this summer.
Michael, I've got two problems with what you're saying. First of all, everything I've read about the U.S. drug trade, and I have read a fair amount, say that the principal source of drugs coming to the U.S. is from South America, not Afghanistan.
You're correct.
And what's South America and got to do with the terrorist events of September 11th? That's number one. Number two, Al-Qaeda is not the Taliban. They're just separate groups. Al-Qaeda is a network, as you know, and it's mm-hmm. worldwide. Mm-hmm. Its origins were in Egypt and in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And that network continues to be a major threat. And I think most people in security intelligence and the police and the governments all agree mm-hmm. that the terrorist events of September 11th were caused principally by the Al-Qaeda network.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to make the connection between Saudi Arabia and Egypt and the Al-Qaeda network, which is in some 60 countries, with this isolated, albeit important, problem in Afghanistan of the reinvigoration of the opium crop.
Okay. Two quick answers for you. First of all, yes, you were quite right that the United States receives about 60 to 70% of its heroin from Colombia. Canada's a little bit more mixed. You get some from the Far East. You also get some from Western Europe because of smuggling routes. However, it's the cash that is important and the movement of cash. That will change as a result of U.S. dominance now in Central Asia with direct transport lines from Central Asia to the Western Hemisphere and the U.S. Yes, Al-Qaeda was a principal, certainly involved in the attacks on September the 11th. However, the war in Afghanistan was a war against the Taliban as well. I mean, we eliminated the Taliban regime, and as a matter of fact, since occupying the country, we, the United States, have sprung a number of heroin warlords from prison and put them into peacekeeping, marshaling roles to effect political assuagement, if you want to call it that, and control the country.
But as part of the, as part of an overall strategy to get out Al-Qaeda?
Well, that's questionable, because my belief is that the purpose of the war and the fact that we overlooked direct foreknowledge of the attacks and allowed them to happen was to secure construction of a trans-Afghani pipeline that UNICAL had been trying to get built for a number of years, to let the Exxon, the major oil companies, get their oil out of Central Asia, and to secure control of the drug cash.
We seem to have flipped into oil.
I wonder if I could just sort of step back for a minute and look at the larger picture just for a second. September the 11th was an enormous event, obviously. Mm. Probably, in terms of its impact on the American public, the biggest event of its kind since the assassination of President Kennedy.
Oh, agreed.
And the assassination of President Kennedy was followed by a whole bunch of conspiracy theories, almost endless conspiracy theories, mm-hmm. that the communists were involved, the mafia was involved, the underworld was involved, and so forth, none of which really seemed to pan out in the long run and sort of cancel one another out. In a sense, aren't you starting to do the same thing with September the 11th by basically talking about various conspiracies that are really behind the true story?
That's a great question. I'm really glad you asked it. My journalism since 9/11 has been not to go into any of the conspiracy, if you will, non-provable speculative realms, i.e. were there explosives in the building, were the planes remote control. Those are non-provable events. My focus as a reporter in From the Wilderness has been to take government documents, government records, official press reports, and to point out the anomalies in those and say that, wait a minute, these stories and these government positions are not telling the truth. That's the place where I stop and say, and begin to say, there's another agenda here which needs to be drug out into the light.
Yes, Phyllis, go ahead.
Yeah, it seems to me you're applying a good old-fashioned benchmark to analyze who pays, who profits. You look at the results and you say, now how does that tie in with the stated purpose? And it's hard to think that when you're bombing Afghanistan to smithereens and killing a lot of civilians, and more civilians died there, it is estimated, than died in New York, that your goal is to catch the terrorists. There are ways to do that. They involve police enforcement and international legal mechanisms.
Can I ask you another bottom line question, Mike?
Sure.
You're raising a lot of interesting questions, obviously, about September the 11th, and I've read some of the material that you've released on the Internet. And in addition to the questions, I keep getting back to the point, what are you actually trying to say? And are you trying to say, in fact, that President Bush basically engineered the events of September the 11th?
Engineered is a difficult word for me, Peter. It's the Bush administration knew the attacks were going to take place, and that they kind of turned a blind eye and may have, in fact, left-handedly facilitated. I'm not saying engineered and or executed directly.
But you're saying that they could have prevented
absolutely
these attacks.
Absolutely.
They could have prevented the destruction of the World Trade Center.
Absolutely.
So they colluded in the destruction of the World Trade Center. In
they let it happen.
Yes.
Let's stop on this point of what actually happened on the day. How could they have prevented September 11th? How did they collude?
Okay. Well, this is the subject of a two-hour lecture, so I will try
to... tell us in 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll do the Federal Express guy. I'll talk very quickly. First of all, we know that from documented warnings, major press sources, Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, BBC, all respected press outlets, that the intelligence services of Germany, Russia, Egypt, major intelligence, the Mossad, and if you take the reports that are documented and acknowledged from those sources and you put them together, you see that the United States government, we know, had received warnings that some 25 suicide hijackers would be hijacking airliners and crashing them into the World Trade Center on the week of September 4th. And these are intelligence reports from the governments that...
Well, they had a long list of targets. The World Trade Center was only one.
Indeed. That's just one...
But it was one.
Yes.
That's the important
that
point.
That was certainly
factually.
One.
And it had been targeted before.
Yeah,
in 1992 it had been attacked, so no secret.
We also know from the U.S. District Court in Manhattan in February of 2001 that it was revealed that the National Security Agency had broken all of Osama bin Laden's secured, encrypted communications. There was also incredible evidence that was overlooked immediately, and this is something that plays directly into Canada, of insider trading, major significant put options, which are basically bets that the stock prices will fall on United Airlines and American Airlines, other companies hit by Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, and we know, we absolutely know for a fact that intelligence agencies monitor stock trades in real time through use of very sophisticated software called Promise. And that these trades were placed, some of these trades, the United Airlines trades, were placed through the firm Alex Brown Deutsche Bank, which was headed until 1998 by the man who was currently the executive director of the CIA, a man by the name of Buzzy Krongard. There's many, 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 many warnings. You could look at the evidence, and again, it's tough to take one piece of evidence and put it out. When a lawyer makes a presentation, he gets to put 100 exhibits before the jury, not just one.
Now, you're saying that many of these sources that you've been using are from newspapers themselves or news services of different kinds.
Yes.
And they're public. So why aren't we confronting a major American journalist right now or a major American editor who's put the same dots together and come to the same conclusions? Instead of obscure person.
50 senators and how many congressmen and the Securities and Exchange Commission and all the various mechanisms that are built into the U.S. political system to ensure that nobody is corrupt. Because that's what you're suggesting.
They are totally corrupt, and that's what I'm flatly stating.
And every U.S. congressman and senator who has an oversight role in this is also corrupt.
Corrupt and or compromised. To the point where, and I've just traveled to Washington recently, and I've produced a videotape, and I had three members of Congress appear in my videotape. So, obviously, Washington is not totally without ethics. However, the pervasiveness of the corruption, I mean, Enron is a perfect example. That stench is growing rapidly throughout Washington.
But relevance to September 11th.
Relevant to September 11th. Everybody, the SEC has, I have contacted the SEC as a journalist, and I've said, look, we know these insider trades were placed. You know that we have banking laws that are akin to medical records in the U.S. I can't go find out who made the trades because they're secrecy requirements. Brokers can't disclose.
SEC can.
SEC can. SEC will neither confirm nor deny the existence of any investigation. Members of Congress with whom I have spoken have said, we're not looking at that. Period.
So why aren't the major media drawing the same conclusions from this publicly available data that you're drawing?
They should be. They absolutely should be.
But why aren't they then?
But what about corporate control of media?
Well,
who benefited out of this whole military use of goods to go off to Afghanistan? Immediately you get transfer of money to the defense industries. You have tie-ins with newspapers. So you're not expecting the newspapers to be asking a question when you've got the government pushing a patriotic, jingoistic approach to things?
I would think if that was happening, I would think that there would be some journalists somewhere in the States who would be talking now about silencing of sources, inability to get things published.
I've read Senator Richard Shelby, and he's questioned the head of the CIA quite aggressively and is going to come back for more. He's also questioned the head of counterintelligence for the FBI. Mm-hmm. And those are hearings that are going on in the next few months, and certainly I'm going to watch them, and I think U.S. media will watch them. Let's talk about Canada, too, in this context, because we're complicit.
That's very important.
If you're suggesting that the watchdog apparatus, if you will, in the U.S. is corrupt, then so is the Canadian apparatus.
Indeed.
Because we're all interdependent with the U.S. We liaise with the CIA, we liaise with the FBI, we liaise with the police forces. So that means the CSIS, the RCMP, the SEC, the CSE, the provincial police forces, the municipal police forces, they're all corrupt and tied in with this too.
So, Ron Atkey,
that's what you're suggesting.
Are we corrupt or not? Are we implicit or not? What's your view of this?
I'm having difficulty coming to that conclusion, Rita.
Tell us more. Why are you having difficulty?
Well, I believe that we don't have a perfect system of political accountability and transparency in North America, but we have a good system. And I believe in the United States they have a reasonably good system of transparency and counterbalance and counterweights and political parties and media, and it all works generally to expose wrongdoing. It did that in the case of Watergate.
it took a long time.
Yeah, but it achieved the result.
At the beginning of
it achieved the result, and you brought down a president in the United States, and that was a success of the system, if you will. I think we have wrongdoing in this country from time to time. It's exposed sooner or later, sometimes not as well as it should be. Peter probably has views based on the Somalia inquiry as to whether you ever get to the bottom of that. But nevertheless, we have enough people who are not part of an implicit corrupt system, which you're suggesting, that I find what you're saying hard to
I have my hand up.
All right.
May I talk? Yes. Excellent point. I, for one, am extremely concerned about Canadian sovereignty. In August of 2000, I was visited by two members of the RCMP National Security Staff who were conducting an investigation into the RCMP's use of Promise software, which they believed had been compromised by the CIA and or CSIS. During those conversations, as a matter of fact, I still have, there's their cards from the RCMP National Security Staff. And we had talked about RCMP's version of Promise being compromised, and the fact that one of the investigators in particular was very concerned about the loss of Canadian sovereignty being subjugated to U.S. intelligence and economic interests. My investigation led me to a speech by Derek Burney, your former ambassador to Washington, in which he was virtually obsequiously fawning to American economic interests, saying that if we don't do what the Americans want us to do, we will find ourselves replaced by Mexico as the largest trading partner of the U.S. It was a virtual capitulation. And when that kind of power, economic power, is being wielded, and it's being wielded by Wall Street, let's go back just briefly.
There are a couple of points that I think we're losing that I want us to stick with. One is the failure or not of journalists. Peter, you frequently accuse journalists of not getting to the bottom of things. Are you saying in this instance that journalists are connecting all the dots and you just don't see a case for this?
No, I'm saying that they're not connecting the dots in the same way. And I think that if the conspiracy was as obvious as Mike says it is, that there would be journalists someplace who either were connecting the dots and writing about this and broadcasting about this on a large scale, or they would find that for some reason or other they've connected the dots and the publishers or the television owners won't use this material. When that happens, and it happens from time to time, journalists have other ways of getting the material out, usually through other journalists or stuff that they put on the internet or whatever, and that doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, let me just respond briefly, which dovetails both of your points actually together nicely. GE is one of the largest defense contractors. They own NBC. CNN uses military satellites for its live feeds. We know that CNN has U.S. Army intelligence personnel sitting in its newsroom. Okay, these are, by virtue of the stock market alone, and the stock market's dependency both upon the oil revenues and the drug cash, which is documented now, they don't have a vested interest in telling the truth. Now, I have been doing, since September the 11th, interviews.
Why is AOL Time Warner that owns CNN doing so poorly? Its stock market is its historic low now. It doesn't prove your point, Mike.
Well, I'm not saying it proves my point, but the anecdotal relationships cannot be ignored. These are things that you have to look at when Army intelligence personnel are sitting in the CNN newsroom.
Ownership talks.
Yes. Money talks.
Yep.
Many stocks are failing, but so are the accounting procedures of Enron. I mean, we're in a fragile economic situation, I think, all over the world right now. But as I've traveled the country, and I've been here, I've lectured twice here in Toronto, Canada, at the University of Toronto, at UT. As I've traveled and done media, I have seen radio talk show hosts on large networks lose their jobs for having me on the air. We are living in a world of censorship. I am saying that, and it's happening.
Radio talk show hosts.
Yes.
Not television. We come just about radio.
Yes.
Yeah. We are living in weird times. You know, it troubles me deeply that both my church and the Raging Grannies, of which I'm a member, are identified not just as they were after APEC, as a low-grade security risk, but now as subversive. And I know that the definitions under C-36 for terrorism are sufficiently broad that they could catch my legitimate questioning dissent from orthodox views. I find this absolutely reprehensible, and that is If we are fighting a war against terrorists, but we're losing democracy at home, what's the point?
I maintain that we're living in an empire, that the Supreme Court was nullified any claim it had on legitimacy by overturning a Florida law that clearly said the clear intent of the voter and threw that out. But I wanted to back.
But would it have been any different had Ben Gore been president? Would the events of September 11th not have happened?
Great question. Wonderful question. I think that we are on the cusp of a major world oil crisis. And this is where I rise above the level of partisan politics. I look to groups like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, founded by Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Let's follow the money again.
Follow the money.
Let's come back to oil, which we sort of dropped out of the pipeline. What's oil got to do with September 11th?
Boom. This is a map that Zbigniew Brzezinski, again, who was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, worked on intelligence for Ronald Reagan, founder of the Trilateral Commission, wrote in a 1997 book called The Grand Chessboard, and he draws a line around where the next conflict is going to be, where 75% in Eurasia of the world's known energy resources are. This is the Caspian Sea. This is exactly where we're fighting right now. And yet he wrote in this book 4 years ago that this was where the conflict was going to be. And he said in three places in this book, he said, without an attack on the order of Pearl Harbor, the American people will never support the effort of imperial mobilization, his term, not mine, required to exert the military force necessary to secure control of this region. That book was written 4 years ago.
But that was proven unnecessary. I mean, next to Saudi Arabia, Iraq has the most amount of oil, and George Bush, the senior, had no difficulty mobilizing American opinion.
But Ron, what we're talking about is geopolitics.
Indeed.
We're talking about the desire to profit. And it's not just for the country to profit, but for those involved in the corporations to do so.
Indeed.
And that's what keeps power in their hands.
It's
money,
cost?
Political power.
I think another thing, Mike, is that we're at the very early stages in this whole story. Mm-hmm. I mean, September the 11th was an enormous event. It had a tremendous impact on Americans and Canadians and people worldwide. Mm-hmm. And it mobilized opinion, there's no doubt about that, behind the American government and the Canadian government and Western governments generally. People had an emotional reaction, which they're still feeling to a certain extent.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's starting to shift already, and people are now starting to ask some of these questions and starting to take a longer view. And in fact, I think American congressmen only a few days ago were asking, why are we still putting more soldiers into Afghanistan? What exactly are we trying to do in Afghanistan now? And there's no satisfactory answers. So in some ways, you may be the vanguard of a closer examination of the causes of September the 11th and the motivations and the fallout, which will come through the media, come through parliamentary institutions, come through Congress.
If I remember, a few months back, the whole purpose of the war on Afghanistan was to capture one bad guy. That has not happened yet. So who is this Bin Laden character? And indeed, why are we not more concerned than we appear to be about the fact that he hasn't come into custody?
Osama Bin Laden's getting his nails done in Switzerland. That's what I believe. Yeah, I mean, he...
You don't believe that his DNA is scattered over some plane
no,
in Afghanistan?
No, I absolutely do not. We know that the Bin Laden family and the Bush family have had joint business investments for a long time. We know that in 1998 and 2000, thanks to the Wall Street Journal again and the New York Times, that George Herbert Walker Bush, Poppy, which is a great name for him, traveled to Saudi Arabia and met with... for the Carlyle Group, and we can get to the Carlyle Group in a moment, met with the Saudi royal family and the Bin Laden family. Former President Bush has admitted this. They all had investments in the Carlyle Group. From the Wilderness broke a story on that right after September the 11th. And as a result of that story and other people picking up and doing the same thing, the Bin Laden family sold their interest in the Carlyle Group. We know that in 1976, that far back, Osama Bin Laden's older brother, Salim, through a Texas investment banker, Jim Bath, who has intelligence connections. He's a National Guard pilot who flew with George W. Bush. They're old friends. Gave Jim Bath control of the Bin Laden family investments in the United States. And that same year, Jim Bath invested $50,000 in George W. Bush's first company, Arbusto Energy. There are close business connections.
If we accept all of these connections, though, even if we accept all of these connections, why hasn't the evil one been apprehended? What is all of this about?
Well, I would argue, who cares? I think he's a charismatic character, and he's ridden on his charisma. I think he is only one of many, many, many people within Al-Qaeda. He's not an Afghani. He's from Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And he found, and he and others in the Al-Qaeda movement found refuge in under the Taliban government in Afghanistan.
Right.
That's why Afghanistan became the target for U.S. military action, which has, quite frankly, very limited ability to root out Al-Qaeda as a network. I think it's not really something that you go after with a military operation at all. And I think probably the military operations in Afghanistan are not going to continue. They have the occasional skirmishes. It's a holding action. I think going after Al-Qaeda involves not military, but more security intelligence efforts around the world. And whether bin Laden is dead or alive, as they say, doesn't matter that much. It's the existence of the terrorist network and the threat to us.
But, Ron, you have just pointed out the whole difficulty. It's security operations that are required for finding terrorists. It's not bombing. There is no way that by bombing you're going to... And we don't even know, as far as I know, we haven't had any trials of any of the 19 terrorists that were arrested. None of them are Afghanis at all.
Not the terrorists.
It's not a method of combating terrorism.
It was necessary to replace the government that was harboring the terrorists, and that was the initial justification, and they've achieved that. It's done. It's over.
Isn't that interesting? It's a government that the Americans themselves helped get into place.
Well, I don't defend it. You're quite right.
Not only that.
The current objective was to replace that government.
But look at the behavior, again, which is not consistent with the stated goal. The behavior is, and I predict, and I think I'm going to be proven right on this in very short order, you have Canadian troops there fighting, and that's a first for you guys in a long time. But we will see U.S. troops there protecting the pipeline construction. We will see massive deployments. We have seen, and this may be America's equivalent of Hitler's march to Moscow. We have seen U.S. troops deployed in Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and now in Georgia. Deployed. Permanent bases being established. This is an imperial occupation. This is not a short-term goal, and you were absolutely right. Osama bin Laden is Saudi Arabian, and there are monstrous problems. That is so problematic with Saudi Arabia, we haven't seen the end result of that yet. But the behavior is of imperial occupation. And the pipeline, we know, October 10th, Ambassador Wendy Chamberlain met with the Pakistani oil and gas minister and said, gee, this pipeline that UNICAL couldn't build for so long is now back on the table. Hamid Karzai, the interim prime minister, is a former UNICAL employee. President Bush's special envoy, Zalami Khalilzad, is a former UNICAL employee. It's oil everywhere. Henry Kissinger was just named head of China's Offshore Oil Advisory Board. He's on both ends of the pipeline because China and Japan are the chief markets for the oil.
Peter Debra said a few moments ago that it's early days. Is it early days or late days in terms of the behavior of journalists, the building of the pipeline, the failure of intelligence or the non-failure of intelligence, the dismissal of civil liberties, rights, and freedoms? Is it early? Are we asleep, or are we just about to be awake?
The head of CSIS in Canada has not yet been called before Parliament to say what happened on September 11th from a Canadian point of view. Why did you miss the Canadian connection? That's going to happen sooner or later, and it may happen this spring. The head of the CIA is now being called to account. I hope he will be vigorously called to account.
But I seriously doubt whether those hearings are going to be anything more than a cover-up.
Well, let's see.
Ron, I think you're missing the bigger picture. It is very late times. Those military forces of the U.S. branching out into what was the former Soviet Union, but which is critical to the Caspian Sea oil and the connections in there, are just another add-on. They're already where 800 American military bases around the world in 80 countries. And there are 174, something like that, in Japan alone.
Mm-hmm. And a bigger question with Iraq.
The bigger question has to do with where is the U.S. going? The U.S. has now decided that it's okay for the U.S. to drop nuclear bombs on a non-nuclear country. It has cast aside the anti-ballistic missile treaty. It is working for newer nuclear weapons. It's considering new open testing of nuclear weapons.
Behaving like an empire.
And its missile defense program is simply a camel's nose in the tent, because the end goal is weaponization of space, dominance through space, and that's to protect American economic interests. And that's all documented.
Peter Debrett.
When you talk about the methods of doing this, may be illegal or suspect. That's another question entirely.
Right.
But how else would you expect the largest, most important, most powerful country in the world to behave? Of course, it's trying to look after
its own. But non-weaponization of space very strongly, because it is a global commons. It is for humanity.
We are in a whole new paradigm. World oil production will peak in 4 years on a bell curve, and it will never be exceeded again while demand and population are increasing enormously. Natural gas produces fertilizers. The pesticides come from oil. We have increasing demand, which can only result in chaos. We will be able to follow what Dick Cheney said, this war which will never end in our lifetimes. That's a quote. We will be able to follow this war from oil reserve nation to oil reserve nation to oil reserve nation as the empire of the United States, spearheading globalization on a broader scale, occupies the last remaining oil reserves in the world to control them as the world tips over the edge of the Hubble curve, which is what it's called. That's becoming increasingly obvious as we move to Colombia, which I've been writing about for some time. There's oil there, et cetera. It's Iran, Iraq, all of those nations are on the plate.
Well, you're getting in a lot of speculative areas there. I mean, the whole scenario that the world's population is going to go on endlessly increasing is now under attack consistently by demographers who say that, in fact, that's not going to happen at all.
Well,
that it's going to peak at a certain point, I don't know whether it's another 40 or 50 years, and then start to decline fairly rapidly.
That's right.
Don't be speculative about oil production, though.
But can we come back to terrorism a little bit? And I mean, Iraq and Iran are two things we should talk about as Canadians, and the decision our government
the
will
evil
make.
Evil axis.
Yes, which Canada has not made a decision yet. I think they have asked quite rightly, show us the evidence of terror-sponsored activity from Iraq or from Iran. Otherwise, we're not going to join in. I think that's the message I've heard out of Ottawa. It's a legitimate position to take. So the onus is on the American leadership to say, well, Iraq, we have this evidence. I'm not sure that they can meet that test. I think the other, Blair has gone one way. I think France and Germany have gone another ways, but there's a genuine debate going on. So I don't think we can assume that they're going to have this creeping growing of an empire into Iraq and Iran and these other places where the rest of the world sits idly by and watches it happen.
Well, let's hope that would be the case. We're dealing with my view of the United States government and the United States political system is that Enron demonstrates this. It's a criminal enterprise that's out of control. The U.S. government has become a franchise operation for major corporations, and I think you can make that case given the time to do that. Enron, there's just monstrously $2.3 trillion from CBS News is missing, gone, looted, stolen from the U.S. Department of Defense. $59 billion looted, stolen, missing from housing and urban development. There's something seriously wrong. It's behaving like a criminal empire, like a criminal regime.
Ron Atkey is saying, though, that the rest of the world is not so dumb as to follow these activities. Let's pick up on this point. Why do you believe that?
Well,
and let's others jump in here as well.
I believe that there are two forces at work. First of all, these countries are sovereign countries, some more so than others. I think the countries of Europe have the capacity to exercise and assert sovereignty through their unified European economy in a way that wasn't always the case. And I think that's important as a counterbalance. Secondly, I think that there's a democratic tradition of saying, show us the evidence. before we jump into major initiatives like this. I think the people, through their elected representatives, demand their governments behave that way. And I think that's generally true of our governments in Canada and in England and in France and in Germany and the rest of the European Union.
But Canada has condoned the constant bombing that has gone on by the U.S. in Iraq over the past years. It didn't end with the end of the Gulf War.
Not now. Not now.
There's still bombing going on.
In Iraq?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There
not,
is.
Not major bombing I'm aware of.
I mean, if you...
There are sanctions in place, but there aren't bombing going... Not, the U.S. is proposing, perhaps they move in that direction. There's not current bombing
the
going on in Iraq,
The U.S. does
have
bombing raids in Iraq, sorry.
Let me just raise another point which bothers me, Mike, and I don't know whether it bothers you. When you're revealing some of this information and these facts and basically saying that the government of the in Washington is part of a conspiratorial exercise and it's in cahoots with big business and is simply beholden to big business, and in fact agencies of the American government are involved in the drug trade and so forth, and the media is part of this whole process, aren't you concerned that particularly when the situation in the States is under stress and in other countries, aren't you concerned that you yourself in fact are contributing to a serious loss of trust and faith by people in the democratic processes that do exist in the media, and in a sense you're becoming a destructive element yourself?
Well, I left the Los Angeles Police Department in November 1978, earning the highest rating reports possible.
Mm.
After I had witnessed with my own eyes the Central Intelligence Agency dealing heroin, trafficking, smuggling large quantities of heroin, when my government behaves in a manner which is honorable and which warrants my support, my respect, and my honor, I will give it to my government. Not until. One of the most telling points that I make in my lecture is that founding fathers, les philosophes, people to whom, writers to whom we all owe our allegiance, as having recognized that God wove freedom into every fiber of creation, that we give power to the government and we have the right to take it back at any time the government does not behave honorably or ethically. I'm saying, on a spiritual standpoint, that accounting is long overdue. In my country, we have for 38 years had the film of John Kennedy being shot from the front. We've had this absolutely ludicrous report. We had a savings and loan scandal. We had Iraq-Contra. We had a litany of scandals in our country, well-documented and well-known. Iraqgate, the arming of Saddam Hussein by George Bush, the genocide in Rwanda, and we have never accounted for that. One of my favorite quotes is from Carl Jung, and I think he was a wonderful man. He was a psychiatrist and a very spiritual man. He said, "The foundation of all mental illness is the unwillingness to experience legitimate suffering. People don't want to assume the responsibility. They have put off the debt paying, the accounting, the hard questions, the wailing and the gnashing of teeth, if you will, that is required to restore some kind of integrity. And evil governments, evil empires, however you want to put it, corrupt governments, unless they are checked, will continue to be corrupt, and they will get progressively more so."
On this spiritual question, we are all people with a certain amount of power. Everyone in our audience has a certain amount of power. What are you going to do now with reference to the events of September 11th? If this is a spiritual crisis, how is it going to be addressed for each of us? Ron Atkey.
Well, I think what it means for me is it's time to start asking questions. Was there a massive intelligence failure in the United States and in Canada, the country where I live and have some responsibilities? Did our institutions let us down? And I think with that goes the right of recognizing a system that tolerates dissent, just tolerates asking questions. Tolerates a system where you can have Mike Rupert go throughout the United States and Canada raising some of the very serious and some would say outlandish questions, but he's raising them. That's the test under our constitutionally based principles. And that's how I will behave, and that's kind of what I spiritually affirm.
Peter Deborah.
Well, as a journalist, I agree with Mike that September the 11th and the aftermath is a real testing time for journalists and for news media. So as a journalist, I'm interested in trying to do what I can, working with others who maintain journalism in Canada as a competitive and a diverse and relatively independent profession. And I think that's becoming more difficult, both in Canada and the U.S., largely because of what's happening in the business world and the corporate world. So that's on a professional level. On a personal level, I find that although I'm a churchgoer myself, my whole education and upbringing has trained me to feel that matters of religion and politics should be kept as separate as possible, because they're a very, very explosive combination. And September the 11th has thrown questions of religion and faith into much closer relationship, and I think I react instinctively against that, and I think that's dangerous. I think that we have to look to religion to reinforce attitudes of tolerance and goodwill, in fact, towards others, and not attitudes which lead to religious crusades or wars on terrorism, which are cast in a religious light.
Phyllis Grayton.
I'm going to try and be as wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove. And I'm going to try and encourage other people to do just the same. I think we've lost our moral bearings. I think we have lost our moral imagination. And I hope we still have a moral compass, because we need to encourage everyone to get as much information as they can. That's why I salute Barry Zwicker, I salute Mike Rupert, I salute Michelle Chosudovsky, people who are telling us more of the facts of what occurred. And it's up to us to wrestle with this. And it isn't possible to separate religion and politics, because God rules over all of life, created all life. And therefore, I want people to use their moral imagination. All religions teach, do unto others as you would have them do to you, and don't do to them what you wouldn't have them do to you. And that's a message of humility, of kindness, and of justice. And I'm going to work to promote justice. And to do that, we have to open our eyes. We have to see there will be no security in our world without justice. If we don't help deal with the inequities in the world, with the great gap between the rich and the poor, we will create situations in which it's possible to foment those who will support terrorists.
Thank you very much, Mike Rupert, Ron Atkey, Phyllis Creighton, Peter Deborah, for participating in this special edition of Vision TV Insight Media File.
Barry Zwicker's provocative commentaries, The Great Deception, The War on Terrorism, An Alternative View, are now available on video cassette. To order, phone toll free, 1-800-967-7741, or go to Vision TV's website. Tough questions about what really happened on September 11th and the role of media. Proceeds from tape sales go into producing more great Vision TV programs. This program brought to you in part by Reader's
Digest. He said we have something in common. We hang out all the time.